right, the Andy Finn Show is back, and we are talking about the Iraq War and the reaction to Cindy Sheehan, the mother who lost her son in Iraq, and is dogging George W. Bush. You know, the other problem he's got is that his motorcade leaves Crawford, and he's often going to a fundraiser lately. And so, because this is a working vacation, and so the press has her there, the grieving mother, and a bunch of other protesters, of course, on the left. And then his limo goes by, and he doesn't stop, and he's on his way to a fundraiser. And so as a PR thing, it hurts him. So the right, of course, is outraged that this mother would use her son's death this way, and everybody should support the war effort. And so as we've been going through, there's a number of people that have really taken her to task, because once you jump into the realm of politics, you're fair game, even if you lost your son. That's the problem. And I'm not saying she shouldn't be. She's a partisan. She's taking on a partisan position. She's not acting the role of the grieving mother now. She's acting the role of a partisan with a special moral authority, as we said. But she's subject to attack just like the Swift Boat guys were. So then let's move on to Wednesday's edition of Hannity and Combs. So G. Gordon Liddy was on. You talk about fair and balanced.
trying to be humorous, right?
Yes, of course. They have about 70-75% of their guests are conservatives, and Hannity gets more time than Combs anyway. So as we've said before on this show, I like Chris Matthews' observations that Alan Combs seems like the Washington Generals, right? The team that always plays the Go Harlem Globetrotters. They're allowed to get close, but the rule is you always lose to the Globetrotters. And so Alan Combs is allowed to get close, but he always loses the arguments to the conservatives.
Well, I also think he is genuinely scared of Sean Hannity. He seems to cower sometimes.
I don't think he's scared, but because they don't argue with each other. The format of that show is also you get 2 minutes or 3 minutes, whatever it is, with the guest. And Combs gets his 3 minutes, then Hannity gets his three, or the other way around. But Hannity and Combs never talk to each other. That's the rule. They don't argue with each other. They don't even talk to each other except to hand off segments. So here is Wednesday night's edition of Hannity and Combs with G. Gordon Liddy. Here's G. Gordon Liddy. Quote, "Well, I think that it's true that there are Americans who feel the way Cindy Sheehan does. Unfortunately, they are Americans who are very anti-Israel and in some ways anti-Semitic." She uses the term how the, quote, neocons are doing this thing. That's code word for, quote, the Jews in the Pentagon.
Now, I listened to this live last night when
I did
was
not
on my
hear
way
this.
Home. I listened to the
replay. I was giving a speech.
And the minute he said that, I was like, what code book is he operating from? Since when did neocon mean Jew in the Pentagon?
Well, there is a connection. So let me finish the quote, okay. And then I'm going to talk about this at some point.
I mean, that's a legitimate question. I'm not
No, it's a very legitimate question. Let me finish the quote, and then I'll go into it in some detail. Alan Combs comes in. "Are you calling her anti-Semitic?" Liddy, "Yes. If she gets Israel out of Palestine, then we can get out of Iraq." He's saying that's her argument. I mean, check out her statements. She's way out there. "Cindy Sheehan's anti-Semitic." Liddy, "Yes." Combs, "That's outrageous." And then it went on from there, but I'll leave it at that. Then one more quote here. Christopher Hitchens was on Hardball with Chris Matthews. He's on vacation, so Nora O'Donnell is handling this. That's hardly hardball when Nora's pitching you the questions, let me tell you. But Christopher Hitchens says, she has, meaning talking about Cindy Sheehan, she has just today lied about a statement that she made several times before to the effect that her son was killed in a war run by a secret Jewish cabal within the administration. She now says that she didn't make that statement. She did make that statement. So as well as being a hysterical, paranoid ideologist, or at least being manipulated by people who turned this into camp fruit bat and nutbag, she has decided not to have the courage, or maybe the cowardice, of her convictions. She now said she didn't make a statement that she definitely did. So let me address this anti-Semitism thing. I haven't found in print Cindy Sheehan's comments, and I don't know for sure exactly what she said. I do know she denied in yesterday's Washington Post making the statement. Here's the relevant paragraph in the Washington Post. This is in the flow of the article. "Still, She said some of the statements attributed to her are distortions. Contrary to a letter attributed to her that is circulating widely on the internet, she asserts that she never said the United States is waging a war in Israel, I'm sorry, in Iraq, to protect Israel. Quote, I have said a lot of strong things, and I'll stand by everything I said, Sheehan said, adding that she thought the document had been altered. But I didn't say that, meaning she didn't say that about the relationship between the U.S., Israel, and the war in Iraq. I don't know if she said it or not, but what's interesting is that the right is on the attack and trying to discredit her. So she may have said that. You know, G. Gordon Liddy would probably consider me anti-Semitic, because if you don't toe the line for Israel all the way, that's the charge that's raised either by Israeli politicians in some cases or by Americans who back Israel 100%. Israel's always right. And so, but where this Jewish cabal thing comes from is that the neocons, there are a number of Jewish people in the neocon movement. All right. Also, there was the argument was raised in the Bush administration that the path to Jerusalem goes through Baghdad. The meaning of that, and we've talked about on this show before, is that people in the Bush administration and in the neocons believe that the Middle Eastern problem is fairly intractable, but if you shake up the balance of power in the Middle East, you can solve the Palestinian problem more easily. Now, most Arabs and most Muslim leaders think it's the other way around. The path to peace in the Middle East and to Baghdad and everything else leads through Jerusalem. That is, if you solve the problem in the Middle East, if you give the Palestinians their country, a lot of the problems go away in the Middle East. This came up when Tony Blair was asked a few weeks ago about this charge by Zaqawi that Britain being in Iraq is the reason Britain was attacked. And he says that's nonsense. Well, of course it's not nonsense. If Britain had not joined the U.S. coalition in Iraq, I doubt if they would have been attacked in their subways. I don't know for sure. But of course there's a relationship. In this country, we make the mistake of believing that if you draw any comparison of causality and say, oh, well, our presence on the bases in Saudi Arabia is the reason that Osama bin Laden hates us or wanted to attack us. If we admit that, we're saying he's not a madman, or we're saying that he has a rationale. He still did something totally inappropriate and totally reprehensible and an act of war. Us having bases in Saudi Arabia is not the same as him bringing down the World Trade Centers. There's no moral equivalency, but it doesn't hurt us to admit that the fact that after 1990 we put 12 bases in Saudi Arabia, it got him bent out of shape, and he used that. That was the basis of his fatwa in 1996 against the United States, and it's ultimately what led to September 11th. Conservatives seem to think that it's a problem to admit that, and that we're letting terrorists off the hook when we do it. You know, it's the same thing, Mike, with the crime issue. Liberals tend to look for patterns, and liberals tend to look for social causes to problems, like crime. And conservatives say that you cannot look for deeper causes or patterns. It lets the individual off the hook. So if, let's say, twice as many poor people rob liquor stores, or not just liquor stores, but commit robberies as middle-class people, or twice as many blacks as white people, the conservative says you lock up their ass and you throw them in jail and you give them X number of years, and that's how you solve the crime problem, because you got to make them take personal responsibility. And the liberals will say,
it's a product of their environment.
It's a social problem. Right. It's society is to blame. Now, they don't really say society is to blame per se, but they basically say, look at the pattern here. Can you see what's going on? Poor people are the ones that are committing this? Why are they doing it? And they're saying that it's worth looking at root causes. Well, the mistake is thinking that you can't do both. Looking for root causes does not excuse the behavior of individuals. And if someone is an apologist for that and says, oh, well, don't lock that person up because they were abused as a child, you know, the serial murderer was abused as a child, therefore we shouldn't send him away. No, you still send him away because he's dangerous. But knowing that abuse as a child leads to abuse as an adult, it's good to know that. You know, Adolf Hitler was abused as a child. Now, there's nothing we could have done if we'd known that ahead of time. But John Wayne Gacy, all these serial killers were abused as children. What that tells us is not that they should be let off the hook, but that if we could stop child abuse, we might have fewer of these maniacs running around. Mm-hmm. So you can punish the individual behavior, and you can look for root causes. It's the same, I go back to September 11th. I'm not making excuses for the terrorists. I'm saying that Osama bin Laden said that America will pay for having 12 bases in the country where Islam's holiest shrines are, that is Mecca and Medina, in Saudi Arabia, and then he had his people attack us. That doesn't make the attacks right, but we know why they did it. Now, they might have found some other reason. If we hadn't built 12 bases in Saudi Arabia, he might have been holding a grudge because we went into free Kuwait in the first place, or because whatever. But, I mean, we were on his side for a while. We supplied the Mujahideen with the Stinger missiles and the other supplies they needed to go after the Soviets in Afghanistan. So he didn't hate us originally. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't excuse what he did, but we know why he did it. And I think Tony Blair's in denial if he doesn't believe that we know why Britain was attacked. They were attacked for their policy in Iraq. That doesn't mean you reverse the policy. It means you have to be ready to take your lumps if you're going to believe in a cause. And so George Bush is saying, whatever number of terrorists get created over us going over and occupying Iraq is worth it because Saddam was that big a threat to us. That's a legitimate argument you can make. Now, I happen to disagree with it. I think that Saddam was not a direct threat to the United States. I think he's a threat to his neighbors, and I know he's abusing his own people. But since when did we start caring about the people in every other country? We don't. We care in the Middle East because it's of strategic importance. Read, there's oil there. But he made the case. And so we went in and we'll find out, you know, how true it is. But in the meantime, I do believe that there's many, many more insurgents created, a lot local, some coming in from outside that want us out. And I have no idea how many new terrorists have been created, Al-Qaeda-style terrorists have been created, because we've used a bit of a heavy hand and a heavy footprint in Iraq. I wouldn't have done it that way. I think it's a mistake. I still think it's going to cost us more than it earns us. But he has a legitimate case to make on the other side that that was a way to go. Okay? But you can punish, you can want to punish the individuals, and you can still try and understand the motivation of the group or the motivation of the individuals. They're not madmen. They're probably behaving somewhat rationally. And when we can figure that out, we may be able to put a stop to it, if not by killing every one of them, because we can't kill every one of them, then by getting to the root cause, whatever that is. And if we have a peace deal in the Middle East, that's a big part of the root cause. So that if that makes me anti-Semitic, then I raise my hand and say, then you can call me an anti-Semite. But it doesn't. I'm not saying we stop our support for Israel. But anybody doesn't think that our support for Israel costs the United States around the world, not just the $3 billion a year we've been paying them since, I don't know, before the 70s, but it costs us lives because we've lost lives in the Gulf War and in this. And it isn't that Israel was the center of all of this, but Israel's a piece of the puzzle. It's a big piece of the puzzle.
Well, what else I find interesting is whenever an Israeli soldier or soldiers died or an Israeli settler died, it made the news. But whenever Palestinian children were killed or maimed, never made, even got a brief mention on the news. And that was the root of a lot of this hate. Their children, I mean, their fathers and mothers and brothers and sisters, just like us, they're human beings.
Well,
so I'm sorry, if someone kills my younger brother or my older brother or my wife, I'm going to want blood. I'm going to want revenge. And, you know, you can kind of understand it when you break it down on a human scale like that. But, of course, you know, the Palestinians are just labeled as terrorists and that's it. And all the poor Israelis were bombed and this, that, or the other.
Well,
they've been guilty of quite a few atrocities themselves, the Israelis.
Israel's in a tough position. And I'm not going to call most of them, many of them, atrocities. I think there's a few. And to his credit, Ariel Sharon came out today and declared that Israeli settler a terrorist. He called him a Jewish terrorist. Mm-hmm. He killed four Palestinians, I believe. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'll say about this. It seems to me that Israel's in a tough position. And so what they've learned over the years is that you can't roll over. If you roll over and allow people to do what they want to you, you get what you got from Hitler. 6 million Jews exterminated, and they barely lifted a finger to stop him. So they basically said, never again, we will fight back. So when the Intifada starts, they said, okay, for everybody that they kill, every Jewish settler they kill, we're going to play tough. We are going to go after the terrorists, and we're going to retaliate. So when there's a bombing in Israel, we are going to have a mortar attack on some strategic location, a Hamas safe house, a bomb-making factory, whatever we suspect. And they have pretty good intelligence. Usually, they're taken out.
Mossad is one of the best intelligence agencies in the world.
Usually, they're taking out somebody that deserves it. But the proof that the Palestinians are getting the worst of it is that all along through the Intifada, three times as many Palestinians have died as Israelis. So if we're up to like 1,400 Israelis now, it's not quite that. Let's say it's 1,000 Israelis. It's 3,000 Palestinians. Now, no one can say the Israelis are the downtrodden people here. What they're hoping, I suspect, is that, look, you're losing three times as many people. Logic should tell you that it's time to stop. When it hurts you more than it hurts me, it's time to stop. And that's their game. So, yes, there are some atrocities, or there's some ruthlessness, let's put it that way. And the other thing they do is when they know who the suicide bomber was, they go and they bulldoze the house of his family. So they make people homeless who didn't have anything to do with it. But what they're saying is you cannot support these people. You cannot give these people quarter. And it's a ruthless policy, but they don't know what else to do. They're at their wit's end. Now, the ultimate problem is that we and the French and the British, in the aftermath of World War II, at the height of our power, plunked down in the middle of the Middle East this country called Israel and said, okay, we're going to carve out this land here. You know, we didn't give them the state of Vermont. If we had, there'd still be Vermonters attacking from across the border 60 years later. I guarantee it. Americans don't give up their land. But we somehow thought that the Arabs would allow us, because we were so powerful at the time, we just won World War II, the Arabs would get over it if we carved out a country and gave it to their arch enemies. And we thought, oh, they'll get over it eventually.
Amongst one of the most sacred, holy
right, in the middle of it all. Now, we didn't give them Jerusalem. Israel did not get Jerusalem. They've taken it now because of the wars. Now, you can say, well, the Arabs attacked them. The Arabs lose their land if that happens. That's what happened. So Israel's now an occupying power, having won the multiple wars against the Arabs, and they've been an occupying power for 30-some years. So now they're getting out of Gaza. Well, we'll get to Gaza in one of the later segments here, but the bottom line is we're surprised that after 60 years, the Arabs haven't gotten over it. You know, Josh, you'd have thought by now they'd get over the fact that we carved out a chunk of the country and gave it to their arch enemies. Well, common sense would tell you that it's not a surprise. These problems, these debates, these tensions, these wars go back thousands of years. The idea, the arrogance of the West, of Britain, France, and the U.S. to come in and carve out the state of Israel and then say, you guys need to get over it. We were naive about that. So the war still goes on. We're dismayed and confused as to why they aren't over it. And if you bring this up and say, gee, they've got some good points on the Palestinian side, or even as apparently what Cindy Sheehan has said is, look, part of the reason we're fighting these wars is Israel, you're anti-Semitic. No, that doesn't make you anti-Semitic. That makes you a realist when it comes to politics. Believe me, I am not anti-Semitic. I have a number of Jewish friends, and frankly, American Jews are a little scared at the way the settlers, for example, in Gaza, the really extremists, are about this, because they have no intention of giving back the West Bank. Mm-hmm. But we don't get peace until they give back most of the West Bank. Now, they say, well, we can't give it back. There's no one to negotiate with right now because these people want to kill us and push us into the sea. Well, that's true. That was the mistake in carving out Israel. So I don't believe that the Iraq War is primarily about Israel, by the way. But you cannot talk about the Middle East without talking about two issues. The state of Israel is one of the major powder kegs, one of the major problems, points of contention in the Middle East, and the other one is oil.
That's also one of the last remaining ways I think the U.S. can save a lot of face and up our street cred is by being a big part in solving the issue.
There's no question, and we used to be a more honest broker than we are now, even though we always allied ourselves with Israel. We also ally ourselves with Saudi Arabia and Kuwait and a few other oil producers. But the Bush administration has really tipped the scales towards Israel. You know, you don't hear any more talk about Jerusalem as a divided city. What you hear now is Jerusalem's the capital of Israel. Well, they just took it over. You know, that's an occupied city, but we don't talk that way anymore. And the Bush administration has also given the tip of the hat to Ariel Sharon on this whole fence building thing. Now, there may not be another good answer, but they're not putting the fence on the line. They're putting the fence in Palestinian territory. So they're taking more territory. So it's an expansionist policy any way you look at it. And we wonder, well, what are the Arabs so upset about?
Yeah, but it almost sounds to me like you're kind of painting the Arabs as victims when they really, they've been quite guilty of a lot of things.
So when we come back, we'll do another segment about this, and we'll talk a little bit about that, Mike. Because I don't mean to paint it that way. I just mean to point out to people that there's a reason why people are so upset, and Israel's a big part of it.
We're out!